Track 7, London Landmarks. This month's contribution comes from Alison Balsam, a trumpet soloist. She's going to talk about the Shakespeare's Globe Theatre on the south bank of the Thames. You'll note from her talk that these recordings about London landmarks were actually made over 10 years ago, but they still sound fresh.
Maybe it's because I'm a Londoner that I love London so. Maybe it's because I'm a Londoner.
Hello, my name's Alison Balsam and I'm a trumpet soloist. Today I've chosen to talk about Shakespeare's Globe. I've chosen Shakespeare's Globe, which is one of the most original and inspiring theatres in the country for performers and audiences alike, and which attracts visitors from all over the world. It's particularly fitting now as the Globe celebrates its 15th glorious year in June 2012. It's a very special place for me to perform in, and I'm very much looking forward to playing here in August 2013. The Globe's visual impact is probably greatest when it's approached from the River Thames. It's a three-storey, white-walled construction, a bit like a wedding cake. It looks round, but in fact has 20 sides, with many oak beam supports and small windows and a thatched roof. It stands on the south side of the Thames, just across the river from St Paul's Cathedral. Although it's rather dwarfed by all its modern neighbours, it's nonetheless distinct, with a bright red flag on the roof. Today's Globe Theatre stands about 100 yards from the original open-air theatre, where many of Shakespeare's greatest plays were first performed, and is in fact the third theatre to be built. The first was built in 1599. It burnt down in 1613 when a cannon was fired during a performance of Henry VIII. Miraculously, no one was hurt, except for one poor member of the audience, whose burning breeches had to be put out with a bottle of ale, or so we're told. The following year, a second theatre was hastily built on the original foundations, but this was demolished by the Puritans in 1642, who forbade any kind of entertainment and who even banished Christmas. What we have today is a faithful reconstruction of the original, all due to the drive and the vision of Hollywood actor Sam Wanamaker. His acting career was grounded in Shakespeare, and on his first journey to London in 1949, he was appalled to find that the only reference to the site of our greatest playwright's theatre was a faded plaque on a nearby butcher's wall. He spent the next 23 years tirelessly campaigning and fundraising, making his vision of reconstructing the original Globe a reality against much opposition. Sadly, Sam died before the Globe's completion, but at its grand opening, in the presence of Her Majesty the Queen in 1997, his daughter, actress Zoe Wanamaker, delivered the rousing speech from Henry V beginning, "O for a muse of fire," which calls on us to come into the space and to be willing to use our imaginations. Sam's dedication and the story of the Globe is a shining example of artistic excellence triumphing over bureaucracy, scepticism, and active opposition. What I love about the Globe is that it emanates great energy, vitality, colour, and creativity, and is, for me as a musician, a unique and perfect space acoustically. It has an energising and contemporary feel while remaining authentic, and it offers us a real flavour of Shakespeare's London. I saw All's Well That Ends Well here for the first time 2 years ago, and it was truly breathtaking. The standard of acting and everything about the building was of the highest quality and was a real inspiration to me. I shall be giving a series of performances here as a solo trumpeter later this year, which I'm very excited about. We're in the early stages of commissioning a new play featuring Purcell and Handel, and its theme is the trumpet as a solo instrument in this, its golden age. One of my great passions is for the Baroque music of the 17th and 18th centuries, and this early music and the uniqueness of the Globe seem to work in perfect harmony. So, why are the acoustics so good? Well, it's an almost perfectly circular space, and it's been built using original Elizabethan building materials. The frame of the building is oak, and the white outer skin of plaster that covers the walls is made from a contemporary recipe of sand, lime, and goat hair, which acts as a binding agent. All the bricks are handmade, and the thatch is from Norfolk water reed, and is the first thatched roof permitted in London since the Great Fire in 1666. But in case you're worried, a discreet sprinkler system has been installed just in case. No other place I've played enables members of the audience to be so close that they can almost touch the hem of my gown. This is because the stage juts out into the yard at about shoulder height, so people can rest an arm on top if they want. It's hard to believe, but there's space here for about 600 standing or groundling places. It costs just £5 to stand here, roughly equivalent to the Elizabethan penny, and you can move around during the performance if you wish. In Shakespeare's time, there was no maximum capacity, everyone was just crammed in. For more comfort, though, you can sit on wooden benches in one of the three wooden galleries, which act like giant sounding boards and run around the circular auditorium. The upper gallery being about 10 metres above the yard. So all this creates an extremely intimate space, and today, as in Shakespeare's day, the atmosphere is relaxed and informal, something very much encouraged, as is the interaction between performers and audience. This intimacy and the quality of the acoustics is so important to me when I'm playing. There has to be a relationship and a flow of energy between the audience and the performer. Here, there's no barrier between us. Another unique feature of the Globe is that the theatre is open to the elements and performances continue whatever the weather, rain or shine. The thatch roof only protects the stage and the bench seating, so the poor groundlings are at the mercy of the heavens and they need their raincoats at the ready. Occasionally you can hear aeroplanes flying overhead or the sounds of boats from the Thames, which all add to the atmosphere, as do the occasional aromas of the river. At the start of the evening, the performance takes place in daylight, with the audience as visible as the performers. But as darkness falls, discreet lighting gradually illuminates the stage, the galleries, and the yard. This all adds to the magic. There are two huge pillars on either side of the stage, made from complete oak tree trunks. They're painted to look like polished marble, and they've been gilded with real gold. This green oak is ideal for absorbing sound, and because they've dried in position, although they were set vertically, they are now leaning inward slightly. As a craftsman would choose the right materials for the tone when crafting a musical instrument, so the materials chosen for the tone of the building are vital. These pillars could be said to replicate the sound post between the top and back plate of a violin, which enables the voice or sound to resonate so that every word or note is crisp and clearly audible, the space just overflowing with music. The pillars support an overhanging wooden roof known as the heavens. Its underside is divided into panels, each painted deep blue and decorated with stars, moons, or signs of the zodiac. And there's a trapdoor set into it, enabling some brave heavenly being to make an appearance. The back wall of the stage, which is two stories high, has a set of double doors at stage level. These lead to an unseen back room known as the tiring or retiring room, where performers can prepare before coming on stage. Above these double doors, there's a musician's gallery which stretches the width of the stage and overlooks the action. To either side of the musician's gallery are the lord's rooms. In Elizabethan times, these would have been reserved for important patrons who had looked after the financial interests of the playhouse. Not the best seat in the house at all, but it ensured that the audience could see the patron and revere him above the players. For the cultural wealth of his patronage and his extraordinary legacy, if Sam Wanamaker was with us today, this pride of place would surely belong to him.
Thank you, Alison.